Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your strategic alliance of music news and cultural criticism. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff.
Remember when you tried to write me off? Remember when you thought I'd take a loss? Don't you remember you thought that I would need you? Follow procedure. Remember?
We're talking Friends with John Caramonica. Hi, John.
I'm talking about carjackers.
That's Bad Blood by Taylor Swift. One of the primary aggregators of Friends in the known universe.
Pop star, friend aggregator.
Mm. John, you've written an essay in this weekend's Arts and Leisure about the use of friendships
and alliances,
Yeah. Especially with Taylor Swift and Drake.
Yeah, this is something that has been on my mind for a while, and it really crystallized for me over the summer. There have been a bunch of pieces about how Drake works with other artists, has strategic alliances with other musicians, and there's been a lot of think pieces about Taylor's friendships. So you don't want to end up going down that same road again. But I was thinking a lot over the summer about how tenuous it all was. Mm-hmm. And basically in July and August, they both started to fall apart, both models, both approaches, Taylor's approach and Drake's approach.
Okay.
And I don't think it's something that they would necessarily acknowledge on their own. But when you're watching how they've approached their careers over the years, it's hard not to notice that the last 3 or 4 months have been different than the previous year or two.
By fall apart, you mean either they've been mocked,
yes,
in one way or another, or some of those so-called friends have snapped back.
Yeah, or fracturing.
In popular music, there's a little bit of tradition of public friendships,
you know,
I think about like the Outlaws, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Or people who figure out a way to use their combined star power, but usually to create a focused brand. Either it is actually one going concern, one like recording or performing big unit, or it's some larger thing which is being sold as a larger thing. This is not necessarily being sold.
No, and
these are more casual and sometimes one shot alliances. But there's a certain thing about collecting going on.
Well, I think with Drake, it's a little bit more businessy than it is with Taylor. Mm-hmm. But to your other point, the things you're talking about, you talk about the Outlaw movement, for example. Not that those people weren't successful on their own. Not that, you know, there wasn't a Willie moment or a Waylon moment. But I think what was happening there was a desire to change the entire tenor of country music.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that could be better achieved as a collective. It's collective bargaining of a sort.
Mm-hmm.
It's forcing the business side to acknowledge the power of multiple people working together. And it's also forcing fans or the public to understand a bunch of disparate moments as a large thing, like an actual thing to get behind.
Mm-hmm.
You can say the same thing at various stages of hip hop, you know?
Well, in hip hop, first of all, you've got like the crew.
Always there.
Yeah, always there. Mm-hmm. Except at certain moments, the individual became paramount.
Well, I think crew, the hip hop crew, and the reason the hip hop crew is kind of different than this is the hip hop crew is sort of always in thrall to the head person.
Mm-hmm.
You've rarely had a crew where a super successful B guy has become a subsequent A guy.
Okay.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if you're taking crew very loosely and you look at sort of Kanye in the Rockefeller extended family who becomes an A guy. But generally speaking, that's not how it works.
Right.
A guy has a crew to reinforce the fact that he's the guy. It's a symbol of his power. That model, weirdly, is less effective in 2015. That's not something you see in hip hop as much anymore.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this is that both the Drake example and the the Taylor Swift example of friends and connections, they don't really seem to connect to earlier musical models.
No.
They seem to connect more to business models.
Is that a cynical read?
I think I'm allowed to be cynical.
I think that's true. You're also allowed to wear cool outfits and not have people judge you for them.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it's totally just letting you know. Hmm. That's an interesting approach. It's like some Harvard Business School case study type situation.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how they both use friendships and alliances.
Okay.
Let's start with Drake. Drake, over the last 3 years, has done this thing that, depending on your point of view, is either sort of pure vampirism or is just the savviest A&Ring that you could possibly do. Like, he's smarter than everyone else. I'm inclined to think the latter. He's done a couple things on his tours. He's always brought out people for opening acts who are very aesthetically forward-looking and who are the people who are liable to push the sound further 6 months or 12 months down the road. Mm-hmm. He also has done a thing where a song is bubbling up regionally or locally or on the internet. He reaches out to that artist and says, I want to get on this record. I want to get on Tuesday with Makonnen. I want to get on Versace with Migos.
Right.
I want to get on Tony Montana with Future and says, hey, I'd like to do this. They're obviously like, oh my God, Drake. Yeah, sure. They get the benefit of a sudden breakout hit because a local hit immediately becomes a global hit the minute Drake gets on it. He gets the benefit of saying like, hey, I introduced you to Migos. I introduced you to Future. I introduced you to Makonnen, all these people. And I also get their sound. I also literally, I'm downloading their DNA into my DNA.
Right.
And that makes him more powerful. Taylor is a very different thing. Taylor, as a musician, is very, I find, very cloistered off, very walled off. Apart from, say, your Max Martins or Nathan Chapman, Liz Rose. Like, you know, there have been people who have worked with her extensively at different stages, but she's not the type to collaborate widely. She's not on a bunch of other people's records, and a bunch of other people are not on her records, mm-hmm. only here and there. Taylor, though, in the last 18 months, has made friendship part of the brand proposition, which has been very strange. And if you see her talk about it in interviews, what she talks about a lot is, I saw I was getting attention 3 years ago for who I dated, and I was sick of it. I don't want to keep having that be the thing that drives my narrative.
Right.
So I'm basically going to have friends, number one, and then stuff it sort of down the same craw that all the other stuff goes down. Mm-hmm. And what you saw is
she's going to obliterate the old thing of people focusing on her romantic
by being so publicly friends.
Being
with
all
these
about friends.
Now, keep in mind, if she was just friends with John and Ben, Chamra, Jocelyn, just our homies, this would not end up in Us Weekly. But she's friends with Carly Kloss, Lily Aldridge, Lena Dunham, you know, the Haim sisters. She's friends with people who, when they do something together, it makes quite a bit of noise.
Well, at first, there seemed to be something about the power of female friendships.
Mm-hmm. A very real thing.
Yeah.
Also very of the moment.
Right. But it's become bigger than that. It's become different from that.
I think it's again, it sort of depends on which angle you're looking at it from. I mean, I think you could still credibly make that argument and say, like, here is a powerful woman who is not threatened by other powerful women,
right?
Who, if anything, is enhanced by having them around. And
right.
you think, well, sure, like who can't get behind that?
And supposedly they're not threatened by her.
Ostensibly.
Yeah.
And yet, a thing that I spent a lot of time thinking about when I was writing this piece and when I was building up to writing this piece was, why do we always see all these women on Taylor's platforms? We see them at her house. We see them at her concerts.
Do we never see the other way around?
I don't want to say never is a strong word, but I would say the balance is way off. You're seeing it now. Maybe Taylor is like legit the more busy one and legit the more famous one. And I don't know. Don't we all have friends that like sometimes we hang out more on their terms because they're more busy than we are or they're more famous than we are? I guess we all kind of have that friend.
Yeah.
It just seems that Taylor is that friend for very, very many people who are also extremely famous.
Well, a lot of these visual images that we're talking about are, in fact, images from her tour, where as a regular feature, she would bring out one of her super friends right. in whatever town she was in.
But also on her Instagram, you know, there all these people appear on her Instagram. And it's not to say she doesn't appear on those people's Instagram.
Yeah.
But the power and clout is just totally, totally different. There is a psychological weight to seeing picture after picture after picture that Taylor is posting, especially in the early part of this year,
right.
of all these people congregating in her name. I don't follow Lily Aldridge on Instagram. Like, my guess is if Lily Aldridge is like, hey, we're having a baking party, yeah. I don't know if they'd all run to the – no shots on Lily Aldridge.
Now, when people have made fun of this thing about Taylor Swift, I'm not going to just call her Taylor. It's not the kind of person I am.
You're not in the squad?
No, I haven't been called into that group.
We'll work on that.
No, we don't have to do that. when people choose to make fun of it, they don't do it from the angle of, oh, that's pathetic. She needs professional friends. She needs to show that she has professional
friends. Is that what you say in your privacy of your own home?
The way they do it is actually it's sort of sinister. That's the joke. Why do they go there?
We're in a strange thing, and Taylor and Drake occupy pretty similar spaces. They are very, very widely liked. Drake maybe slightly more than Taylor mm-hmm. in terms of spanning different interest groups, mm-hmm. but they are both very, very widely liked. So I think a lot of these things are poking fun at Taylor in not the meanest way possible, because there's something very impressive about it. And so you want to undermine it when you're making fun of it, but you don't want to somehow eradicate the idea of Taylor Swift in your insult or in your dart. You're not basically saying this person has no worth. This person's Adam Levine, for example. You know, no one's like trying to we can eradicate Maroon 5 and it'd be fine. Like, no, people can have the cannons out. It's no big deal. You don't want to eradicate Taylor Swift, but you do want to say there is something about the way that this has been performed mm-hmm. that seems designed for spectacle and does not feel completely truthful, mm-hmm. even though it may be truthful, mm-hmm. in so much as truth is a value that any of us can achieve at any part of our lives.
So you mentioned the Saturday Night Live sketch.
Yes.
Which was quite funny.
I thought that was funny, and I thought it was...
It ended with the one actress who was saying, like, I think I just get her whole deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just into her whole
I'm
deal.
Just into her whole deal.
Yeah. Which was great.
Nice way of putting it.
And that is, I think, it's interesting. This is not the first time that this has happened with a pop musician. I remember maybe 4 or 5 years ago, people were having these kind of come to Jesus moments about Justin Timberlake, where it was like, I think Justin Timberlake's cool.
Right, yeah.
Like, long ellipsis.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Question mark? That's what Taylor Swift is bringing out in people right now, uh-huh. which is like, Taylor Swift is cool.
Uh-huh. And that's happening because there are more and more strategic alliances.
Well, no, I think it's happening because she's very, very good at music is, I think, why
yes, but we're not talking about music today.
No, I know, but I think that's the framework upon which all this other stuff has happened. I think if she was bad at music, then the howitzers would be out. Yes, that thing that A.D. Bryan does in that sketch, which is like, I think I'm just into her whole deal, I guess. That's, I feel like that's a moment where you see a lot of people just be like, yeah, I like Taylor. Yeah. I got, what? Yeah. That sketch, which came in October, that lets you know that it's like just part of the public consciousness. It's on Saturday Night Live. Everybody's, it's a joke that everyone is supposed to get. Mm-hmm. Taylor's got a zillion friends. She's just vacuuming up. She's Dysoning up. The whole world. Mm. Y'all, everyone's in the squad. The one that was much darker was the thing that was on YouTube a couple months prior to that, where this woman who best I can tell, maybe hosts a podcast and has a pretty funny Instagram, but I'm not sure what else she's doing besides making this one incredibly hilarious YouTube video where she's emulating Taylor Swift on stage, down to the walk, the arm motions, everything, and basically rendering this thing that Taylor does, which is please welcome to the stage Haley from Paramore, please welcome to the stage, you know, Karlie Kloss, and just turns it into this incredible macabre game where it's like Nicole Brown Simpson,
right,
the female survivors of ISIS.
Right, sure.
And it's like, sure, LOL, but also like, can you imagine a Taylor Swift who's like 5 years old and a little bit more politically aware being like, please welcome to the stage Malala Yousafzai?
Yeah.
And you'd be like, sure. Like, yeah. And I mean, maybe a million people watched that video. Mm-hmm. Not 20 million, but a million. It let me know when I saw that, I was like, okay, it's out there. That idea is out there that there is a high degree of performance in what Taylor is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that Taylor also seems to feel that all of this stuff belongs under her umbrella.
Sure.
Once that thing is out there, it's going to occasion some kind of shift. And I think Taylor is very smart about this. She said something to GQ recently, which I don't know if she meant to say it. I mean, obviously she means to say everything, but it was very astute, where she was like, I pay attention. And she's like, I basically know what's being said about me. And I think what she's saying is she understands when an idea about her has gone so large that she has to zigzag away from it. Mm-hmm. And I think what you've seen in the last 2 or 3 months is the idea that Taylor's friendships are not a sign of female empowerment and sort of like a feminist act, but maybe that there's something darker and more sinister. And I think she's probably picked up on that. And I don't think the friend era is going to survive into 2016 or 2017. That's my best guess.
So lone wolf?
Lone wolf, or like move to Paris, you know, like some other meta narrative.
Yeah.
Some broader thing. The friend narrative has also been complicated this year, of course, because of her in relationship with Calvin Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe contractual, maybe not.
Right.
Who knows?
Right.
But it sort of gussies it up a little bit.
Well, let's switch gears and hear a little bit of Rico by Drake and Meek Mill. They gon' go Tony Montana and cop them some Shaq at the free throws, but they're from the wave, fam. There's not much to say, fam. They told me to tell you, you measure some wastemans and stay in your place, fam. My dad is from Memphis and I am the king. I should probably just move into Graceland. Madonna's a ting I know and I'm the king of pop. I'm building Never Neverland. How he hate me when I never met the man. Woo! We might just get hit with the Me Millie. Cause we in the field with them birds like we play for the Eagles. That was Rico, Drake, and Meek Mill.
End of an era.
Is it, though?
I mean, it's an era that ended actually a while ago, but this is sort of the official kind of like final stamp on it.
John, there is a difference between real friendships and performed friendships.
Oh, I thought you were going to start telling me there was a difference between real rap and fake rap, and then we were just going to be a whole different podcast.
There are reasons why people perform friendship. And then there are reasons why people perform breaking away from a friendship.
Well, that's true. But I would actually contend that the realness of the alliances that Drake has made in recent years might in fact be higher than the realness of the non-professional friendships that Taylor Swift has made.
Well, I mean, you're talking about people who are working together as opposed to people.
And they are mutually invested in a goal. I think that there's something powerful about that. Now, I don't want to privilege the professional over the personal.
You don't think that Taylor Swift and Carly Kloss are mutually invested in a shared goal?
Well, I think that they are, but I think that that is not what they are advertising, apart from their shared Vogue cover.
What are they advertising?
Just two girls who are normal who like to bake.
I think there's a shared goal there.
Baking?
Female friendship.
Did you just read the whole Earth catalog before you came in here? Like, what's going on here, my hippie dad?
Let's just bookmark that.
That's for, yeah.
And come back to it later.
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay. Let's talk about the Rico. Fittingly enough, a song about organized crime.
I do think it's a little bit relative. You've got skin in the game with recording, publishing, credits, money, whatever, versus you've got skin in the game with the representation of female friendship. Taylor Swift wants the world to know that she has friends. Taylor Swift wants the world to know that she's not a threat, et cetera, et cetera. These are deep business concerns for Taylor Swift.
I absolutely agree.
Okay.
I think I say as much in the piece.
Yeah.
I think that that is true. I do think that, therefore, that there is something fundamentally more honest about Drake's approach, which manifests not in a bunch of Instagrams of him hanging out with dudes,
yeah.
But it manifests in, let's make records, let's make hits, let's me and you, let's do this thing.
I thought that your whole theory was that Instagram pictures are culturally as relevant as records.
Yeah. I'm not saying that – we're not talking about a difference in cultural relevance.
Yeah.
We're talking about – I mean, in so much as we can talk about honesty, we're talking about honesty. And I do think that there is something more transparent about just making a record.
That the honesty comes through more clearly,
yes,
in the record?
Or in the act of making a record. Because we are dealing with, in both cases, commercial concerns. We are dealing with public perception.
The performed honesty comes through more clearly.
we're splitting hairs here. Do most people consume Instagram as a commercial product? My sense is they don't. Do they consume the radio or songs as commercial products? They do. Therefore, the two approaches feel different. Mm-hmm. There is a performance of organicness in Taylor Swift's Friendships, apart from the Bad Blood video. But there's a performance of an organic quality that Drake dispenses with altogether.
Yeah, but these people are in the perception game.
And, to varying
and
degrees.
Instagram is just as important to the perception game as anything recorded.
Yes, I don't disagree with that. I just don't think that it is the specific commercial product that those people release and make money from. Whereas creating songs is a specific commercial product that those people release and make money from.
Should we talk about Bitcoin at this point?
Should we?
Or should we talk about some like alternate currency?
Yeah, we're going to load up our Tor browser. We're going to get on the dark net.
Okay. Sorry, I've taken you so far off track.
No, this is the track. That's the thing. The track is all of these things.
Now you sound like the Whole Earth catalog. Wherever you go, there you are.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? Drake makes hits. Literally, Sneeze on a record becomes a hit. Good for Drake. He could keep that all to himself. Taylor keeps it all to herself. It's very notable that, like, the people who she is commiserating with, she's not making records with. Hailee Steinfeld is there. She's not making a record with Hailee Steinfeld, at least not to my knowledge. Soraya is there. She's not making a record with Soraya, you know, best I can tell.
Yeah.
That's her space. She's like, I'm keeping this to myself. Mm-hmm. Drake is like, nah, come in the room.
Right.
Now, that said, the music that he makes and the genre that he's from is fundamentally a more collaborative space than what Taylor is doing.
Right.
Taylor is not a singer-songwriter in the classical sense, but she is coming more from that tradition.
Sure.
Whereas Drake is coming from a hip-hop tradition where collaboration is very much the norm. But I think it's notable that he is opening himself up to bringing all these other people in. And Taylor's version of opening herself up is like, you can be on my Instagram.
Right.
Or you can come to my concert and perform on my stage for like 3 minutes.
Same thing.
It's similar. They're close. Mm-hmm. In both cases, and just to circle back to what we said before, in both cases, you are on Taylor's platform. Taylor is not on your. And look, for all we know, next year, Taylor may start dropping in on other people's concerts. You might go to like a weird Kings of Leon show and Taylor's going to show up. That could happen.
Mm-hmm.
As of now, it has not really happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's – I fought the urge to be cynical about – Taylor's friendship strategies, but then when I thought about how much she was in control of the terms, it became hard not to be a little more cynical
about
it.
So you're saying that Drake's alliances are getting more out of their connection with Drake than Taylor's alliances
in a tangible way, yes.
And that translates to what you call honesty.
Yes,
it's
a version of honesty, yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
The Bitcoin version.
Yes, the Spotify 0.002 cents per stream option.
Right.
You look at the Drake backlash this year, at least one of the cases, the Sauce Twins, Sauce Walker, who put out this diss record, Drake was supposed to get on a record for them. He was supposed to get on, Too Legit to Quit It. He didn't get on it. Now, who knows why, but apparently at some point said he wanted to get on it and then didn't get on it.
Hmm.
So not only is Drake letting them down in a sort of like emotional way of like, hey, I thought we were cool, but he's also... And this is all theoretical because I don't actually know. We don't know the true terms of their conversations. But if you believe the counter narrative, it's Drake kind of dangling this thing. It's like, hey, I did this thing for Migos. I did this thing for Future. I'm going to get on your record.
Right.
Your regional hit is going to become global slang. And if I'm that guy, I'm like, oh, yeah, I want that.
Sure.
Drake's my homie.
Mm-hmm.
And then Drake bails and doesn't do it, taking money out of their mouths. And food and money, mouths and pockets.
Right.
That can be frustrating, and that could cause someone to record a rather scathing diss track. And it's funny because the record that Sauce Walker put out, way, way more damaging than whatever Meek Mill put out. Way more intimate. Pretty dark stuff.
And how do you gauge its damage?
I don't think it affected Drake at all, to be honest. I think Drake, who knows what's happening behind the scenes, but from a public perception thing, Drake just kept steamrolling forward.
Right.
To me, it was notable that in the wake of the Meek Mill thing, people start to see chinks in Drake's armor. And Drake is a guy who's gone really out of his way to cultivate friendships very, very widely in hip-hop with younger artists.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think of it from a pure strategy point of view, it's smart. These are the guys who are coming for your spot. Wouldn't it be good if they were on your team?
Sure.
And now you have a generation of guys who maybe are not on Drake's team. Now, this is going to happen when you're the number one guy. People are just going to be like, well, the hell with it. I'm coming for the chair. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. I don't want you. I don't need you to be nice to me. Mm-hmm. In the same way that Young Thug says he doesn't listen to Jay-Z albums, like most of us.
Right.
Because Young Thug's not concerned about Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. The thing that Young Thug wants, Jay-Z had 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
Right.
But that's not what Jay-Z. Drake is beginning to be that guy for a generation of young rappers.
Right.
Or he's about to be that guy. Mm. So it's not surprising that the friendship model is starting to fall apart, or the alliance model. But I didn't think we were as close to that moment as it turns out we have been in the last 3 months.
Right.
And that starts with the Meek Mill. We played Rico because Rico is the song that Drake did on Meek's record that came out this summer. Mm-hmm. And then Meek was like, we found out Drake didn't write his verse.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we find that out? Leaked reference tracks by Quentin Miller, who's an Atlanta rapper who has worked with OVO and worked with Drake quite a bit. DJ Drama ostensibly leaked them to Meek Mill. If you follow the internet for the last couple of days, perhaps under some duress or some emotional duress.
So what was Meek's motivation in making this public?
Again, you want to talk about friendship. The original Meek tweet, which is really funny, he's like, we found out Drake doesn't write his own raps. Don't compare me to Drake. He doesn't write his own raps. We found out. That's why you didn't tweet my album. He's upset, theoretically, because Drake didn't tweet about Meek's album when it came out and Drake's on the record. That's theoretically. Now, is there maybe an entire backstory about Drake and Nicki Minaj and Nicki and Meek and who knows what?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, maybe there's all that. And we've talked about that on a previous podcast, mm-hmm. our Drake podcast.
Yeah.
Purely on a surface thing, hip hop is collaborative. We should all help each other. We've all worked with each other and we should all be boosting each other. Drake, who's the more famous person of the two, did not tweet Meek's album. And then Meek spazzed. I don't believe it's purely that, but publicly, that's what happened.
Do you think there's anything that is interesting about this dispute? Like anything positive for Drake? In other words, I'm not necessarily asking, was it all manufactured?
Mm-hmm.
But is there something that Drake can get out of?
Yeah,
some
he already
positive
did.
That,
he already did.
That Drake can get out of all my own stuff?
Well, no, because he even in the Fader interview, he doesn't ever explicitly say that. He says, I need people to spark ideas. Like, I have people in the studio and they spark ideas, and I've been in enough studios in my life to know that that's always the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the case with super famous people. It's like somebody's around, they're like, ah, that word. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, that word. And then, like, writes a whole verse off that word. Should that guy get a writing credit? Maybe yes, maybe no. I mean, who knows? But that's not what Drake got out of this. Drake didn't get out of this some kind of like intellectual victory about the nature of how he creates his art. Drake won. That's what he got out of it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't lose. As he says to Meek on Back to Back, it's like, you get embodied by someone who sings. You know, Meek went in this thinking it was the easiest. He's like, I remember many, many years ago listening to Funk Flex talking about someone battling Craig G. Craig G, like a legendary New York battle rapper. And but Craig G was older at that point, and Funk Flex said something to the effect of like, oh, so-and-so thought Craig G was a biscuit, you know, washed up. And just mm-hmm. da-da-da. Meek thought Drake was a biscuit. He's like, how is no one taking this guy? I'm going to take this guy. And he whiffed, like just majestically whiffed.
Mm-hmm.
And Drake, as he says on 30 for 30 Freestyle, he didn't flinch for a second, not one. And he talks about making Back to Back a hit record. He's like, I'm going to make a record that you're going to have to hear in the club about how bad you are. Drake won. And not only is that good psychologically, but it reinforces the entire Drake narrative of 2015, which is tough Drake at the top. Because if you're tough Drake at the top and you can't fight off a contender,
yeah,
then what are you? But what happened is a guy who's reasonably credible, not Jay or Kanye or an A guy, but like a reasonably credible B or B minus guy who knows things, took a shot and completely went down swinging.
Sure.
That's like a huge victory. That's probably the biggest thing that Drake did this year was win that.
But it's not the only kind of shot that can be taken. I mean, it's possible that it opens up the possibility for other kinds of shots.
Well, I think that's what happened. And I think what you started to see in the wake, that's when you see the Sauce Walker stuff.
Right.
Although he'd been saying things online for a couple months, but he didn't put out that record until after the Meek Mill thing was done. Even Earl, you don't want to like bring Earl Sweatshirt into this too much because Earl's just like an incredibly contemplative guy, like just doesn't mind speaking his mind. When he was going on Twitter and saying Drake's kind of a vulture, I don't think he was really being a super insulting of Drake. I think he was just sort of thinking very hard. And he's just like, Earl thinks like a critic. Mm-hmm. He's like, are you guys seeing this? This is like a thing that we're, it's like happening right in front of our eyes. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was taking a shot, but I think he was just sort of like, we should all register that this is happening or this could happen. We were not in an environment where it was sort of safe to talk greasy about Drake 12 months ago or even 6 months ago. But now it's like, okay, maybe all these things that seem like productive, quote unquote, honest friendships or alliances on the surface, maybe there is something where they're weak and they can be brought to light and they can't, or the light can be shined on them and you can see the falsity. I think that's starting to happen. And it's interesting because with Drake, maybe what's going to happen is he's not going to continue to reach out to young rappers and try to work with them. Or maybe young rappers will feel more entitled to say no. Be like, I don't need a Drake cosign. I'm going to do it on my own.
Can you imagine a version of Drake's art at this moment that isn't aggregative, you know, that doesn't take all the stuff going on around him, borrow things, annex things?
No.
You can't.
No. And that's not to say that Drake is not sort of a sui generis kind of guy, because I think he is, broadly speaking, a sui generis kind of guy. But an interesting contrast is like Drake versus, say, Adele or Drake versus Rihanna. We're all excited about this Adele record that's coming. We know it's coming. It's coming in a couple weeks. But it's like she's been crickets for years leading up to one big drop. And she'll have singles and whatever. But it's basically silence, 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 loud roar, slow fade. That's 6 months. And then she'll disappear again. That's not how Drake works at all. Drake is a steady drip of material.
Right.
It's on the OVO Sound radio show. It's remixes. It's SoundCloud stuff. It's mixtapes. I mean, the guy put out two albums this year that he's saying are not albums.
He needs other people.
Or you need an active engagement in the culture. Even Hotline Bling, which you can sort of parse all day, is or is not a remix of Cha-Cha by Drum. It certainly doesn't exist without Cha-Cha by Drum.
Right.
And that's a number two song in the country. Drake's relationship to the outside world is alive. Taylor's relationship to the outside world is not alive. That's why her friendships, or if you want to be cynical, her alliances, are not musical. They're visual. They're aesthetic.
Right, because she's not so much a reactive artist.
Right. She's not going to just drop four tracks on you and be like, yo, I was in the studio with blank, 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 and we're just going to drop this heat on you.
Yeah.
That's not how it's going to work. There was one thing when I was reading, I tried to read all the news items of 2015 about Taylor and Drake and all the any interviews they'd done and whatever. A thing that really jumped out at me that I thought was really in Taylor's favor was she was talking about going with Lorde to, I want to say, the Golden Globes maybe, or something that Lorde had to go to. And Lorde had anxiety about going to it, like felt it was like too much. And Taylor was like, we'll just make it a girls' night. Like, I'll just get dressed up and we'll just make it a girls' night. And then she went. And that was an example of her going on Lorde's platform. Now, Lorde is, of course, Lorde. I mean, she's super big deal. But that was an example where Taylor was like, I'm going to go on your stage.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to go in your – you need something, I'm going to go to you. And by all accounts, Taylor's an incredibly warm person. I've certainly dealt with her a bunch. She's an incredibly warm person. But that was a thing where publicly she showed up for someone else.
Yeah.
And most of what you see are other people showing up for her.
So you feel that it's not in their artistic temperament to change. In other words, it's not in Taylor Swift's artistic temperament to be more reactive. It's not in Drake's artistic temperament to be less reactive. But I have to say that the idea, just the proposition, the fantasy that they could change exactly, you know, like that, they could sort of turn into each other, I find very exciting as a possibility for where each of them could go next.
Here's what I have to say about that. Is it possible, maybe, some deeply buried place, that this entire article that I've written is kind of an elaborate ruse, almost like a parent trap type situation of trying to get the two of these people who I deeply admire, who I'm huge fans of, to look at how the other person works and consider maybe combining approaches and combining talents? Is it possible that at the end of this, Drake and Taylor end up in a room and learn from each other and then maybe put something out in the world that benefits them both and also all of us.
Yes.
Could
happen. I'm going to say yes.
Could happen.
And I'll also say yes to you, John Caramonica,
hey,
for having written this beautiful piece. Nice talking to you. Haven't seen you in a while.
I know. How do I look? I look all right?
Really good.
Thanks.
Considering.
I have a new shirt.
Yeah. We'll go out with Jumpman by Drake and Future.
I see him tweaking, ain't no something's coming. Woo! Jumpin', 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 them boys up to something. Woo! Jumpin', 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 what you expecting? Woo! Shout out, Michael Jordan just said text me. Woo! Jumpin', 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 jumpin'. I just seen the jet take out the other something. Them boys just not bluffing, them boys just not bluffing. Jumpin', 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 them boys up to something. She was trying to join a team, I told her, wait.
That's Jumpman by Drake and Future. Thank you to John Caramonica.
We in here dabbing.
You can read his grand ruse at nytimes.com/music. Thank you to Tamara Best. Thank you to Jocelyn Gonzalez. Producers so good that we don't even deserve them.
That's true. They just spent like 2 or 3 weeks out the country, and look at us, still flossing.
We'll see you next week.